Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yes, Ben and Skin Show 105.3 The Fan. Thank you for rolling with us. It's a big treat for us right now because one of our favorite Dallas Cowboys of all time, also a media superstar, now joining us in studio, the great Marcus Spears here with us. How you doing, Marcus?
Gentlemen, what's up, man? I feel home, man. I'm home.
Dude, you are home. We got love home for you in Dallas, man.
B, I was just, like, I took you hunting the first time ever. Like, we did. I was going straight to this story. That was the whole plan.
Go to it.
Skin, I had to go straight to this story. So we hunting, and I'm doing this DFW Outdoorsman show when I was living here. And I just had to have Ben on because I knew how oblivious he was to anything outdoorsy. And I just think it's a waste of life if you never experience going outside and having a good time.
Right.
So we go duck hunting and we sitting in the stand and I'm like, I have no idea what B is going to do. Like, I just don't know. I don't know if ducks fly, if he's going to shoot me. I don't know what's going to happen. So we ended up having a good day, good shoot. It wasn't anything crazy, but we ended up freestyling.
Uh-huh.
And he showed me some things that I didn't know about. I didn't know he had the flavor like that. Right. So I'm like, is the wife black or something, man? Like, where did this come from? So we had a great time, man. I had to come in and holler at my guys, man.
Now, who was a better hunter, Ben or Derek Holland?
DH. Derek was better.
Was Derek good? See, here's the thing, Skin. Have you ever gone duck hunting?
No.
Okay, so it was my first time, and we're sitting there in this duck blind. It's about 2 degrees outside.
Yeah, it's bad.
And I had a tiny hole in my waders, and we're submerged in water.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole time I'm there, a tiny amount of frozen water is leaking into my pants.
Amateurs.
Right?
Amateurs.
And so these ducks fly. You sit there waiting, and all of a sudden these ducks fly in. It's like, and everybody pulls out their gun and starts shooting. But then some people are like, yeah, man. And some I'm like, what do you mean? How do you know you got one? I think I got one. Who's keeping score? How do you know who hit what? And so I think Marcus just thinks he was hitting them. I think I was hitting them.
Man.
Well, usually the one you're looking at that you shoot at, if it falls, that's probably the one.
I didn't know. I was looking at all of them.
He was not aiming.
Yeah, I'm going to shoot in the area. That's what he was thinking. Look, these pellets go everywhere, and one won't take a duck down. It's got to be centralized to the body, man.
So when you get back here, are you going to immediately go fishing?
Yes. So I'm a crappy fisherman. And where I'm from, people in Louisiana would kill me for saying crappy. We call them sackalay down in Louisiana. Up north, white perch. That's what I love to catch. Like, I'm not a catfish guy. I know a lot of guys are bass fishermen. Bass is very good to eat. I only like hunting and fishing what I eat, though. Mm. So I don't really fishing is fun, but I don't do it for the sport. I do it to eat.
Okay.
I mean, really, that's what I would like to eat more than going by stuff. So when I get back, yeah, I'm on the water. I'm going to get a boat for me and Ben.
Okay.
Yeah.
He needs to learn how to take fish off of a hook. first of all, I'm not going to just sit here and talk about Ben. How are you on the outdoors thing?
I've never gone hunting.
Okay, here we go.
I'd say I'm an elite fisherman.
Good.
But I just go like once every 4 or 5 years.
That's cool. Stay in your lane.
Right.
That's fine.
But when I go, I dominate.
No doubt.
Listen, Marcus, Skin and I are great indoorsmen.
Yeah, man.
Not outdoorsmen, indoorsmen.
You should see Ben work in air conditioner. It's amazing.
It's amazing.
I'll enjoy some AC. He goes to that thermostat and puts it on the perfect
setting.
Y'all
are damn good radio guys.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I do love fishing, and I did have a blast hunting outside of this hole in the waders.
Yeah.
And so I would like to go again, and I'd also like my kids to be exposed to it since, you know, it's something that I wasn't exposed to growing up, so I want them to know how to do that.
Yeah, man. I don't want to get into the kumbaya about the outdoors. I talk about it all the time, but it really is a great place for your kids to grow up, right? And they learn how to work. When I was young, I would go to Alexandria, Louisiana, where my mom was from. Hated it. Hated it. Like, the city was my thing. Playing basketball all day. Football, that's what I wanted to do. Anytime I got hungry or thirsty, that's the only time I went in the house to eat and right back outside. So I would go, my sister and I would go to Alexandria, Louisiana. It was the country, man. My grandfather was a farmer. My grandmother worked at Rapides General Hospital. She was the over the whole kitchen in the hospital. And we worked, bro. Like, we were outside working, picking corn and making sure that we were excavating land for him to plant and going, I mean, ciphering gas out of a tractor. I don't even know if people know what that is, but I thought he was trying to kill himself. Basically, you use your mouth literally to pump gas out of a tractor.
What?
To put it in a can and transfer it to another. So basically, it doesn't really.
That's the most Louisiana sounding thing I've ever heard in my life.
It can mess up and go in your mouth, but basically it's just to create air for the pressure to build up and the gas come out. You put the gas can under and then you transfer it to something else. Instead of going to the gas station.
Yeah.
Right? You just, hey, I got enough gas in the tractor to put in something else, so I'll put it in there. That's what I grew up doing, man. Digging fence post holes to put fences up around the farm. So I think, you know, growing up, looking back at those lessons, those dogged days with the Cowboys, working out, I'm like, I can do this. I've been here before. Like, I know what your muscles breaking down feel like, and I know how much I can push past that. I think every kid need that experience, man. Like, they don't have to, like, your kid doesn't have to be a hunter to be outdoors. Like, that was really the premise of the show when I was doing DFW Outdoorsman here. The premise of that show was to show people that, man, we not experts. Like, I'm not Van Damme. I'm not winning Bass. I'm not winning Bass Pro Series challenges and all of that. But as a normal person, you can hit a lake, throw a hook in the water, and see what happens.
And it's so close by to here.
Yeah, so close by. So and there's so much to do here too, man. Texas is like the you can hit a hog in anywhere. Outside of Dallas.
Yeah. You're talking about pigs?
Yeah, okay. Like pigs.
Yeah,
like
I got to do that too. I've always wanted to do that too. But I hear like,
it's fun, man.
I hear like super rich folks will go get in helicopters and shoot wild hogs.
They will. They will. My tax bracket allowed that for me a time or two. But with that being said, man, the helicopter hog hunt is probably the most thrilling hunt ever. Yeah, it's fun. Because you see so much other stuff running around too.
Did you shoot that stuff too?
No, you can't. No.
You're not allowed to?
I would like to say, because people that hate hunters, like, you the worst person. I'm an ethical hunter, right? I stay within my tags during deer season. You can hunt hogs all year in Texas because they breed every six months. Like, they have babies. They have litters every 6 months. Mm-hmm. So they all over the place, basically. And they ripping people's stuff up. So some people even pay you to come kill hogs. But other than that, man, just I eat it. Like,
you can eat when you get the wild boars. They eat good.
Oh yeah,
really?
Yeah. So what we used to do was we used to go up to Corsica County. This guy named Ray, he had a hog problem. So we would go take some hog off his land and take him up to the North Texas. Not North Texas. We'd take him up to this. I forget the name of this processor, but it's the big one here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then they would take the meat to the North Texas Food Bank. Feed the homeless.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
You're not talking about that. Was it Jimmy Dean place down in Richardson?
It's actually right here, like somewhere near downtown.
Okay.
I forget the name of it. But it's most of the guys that hunt from the Metroplex take their stuff down there. Cook.
All right, we got Marcus Spears in studio with us, of course, now with ESPN, former first-round pick of the Dallas Cowboys. And do you ever find yourself missing interacting with Bill Parcells?
No. Nope, not at all. Funny story, man. I hated Bill Gutch. You know that. We talked about that a lot when I was here. But the thing is now, man, we actually, Bill and I talk probably twice a month.
Really?
It's full circle, right? Man, like, you guys have been around a long time. Mm-hmm. You know the maturity. You know the little squabbles that you think mean so much at the time that meant just so minute in the grand scheme of things. So Bill called me one day. He saw me on television. He was like, you need to lose some weight. That was literally.
While you're on TV.
Like, doing ESPN. That was my text. Like, you need to lose some weight. Right? And I was like, I'm going to hit you back, coach, when I get off. Like, so now I'm flashing back to 2005. I hate you. Like, I hate your guts. And I was like, you know TV had 10 pounds. So we ended up getting done, man. And I called him and he was like, bro, I want you to live. I want you to live. I want you to be around to see your kids grow up, all of that. Because, you know, Bill, obviously having a lot of players under him, he was getting a little, he was nervous for a lot of his guys because of the, you know, you finish in the league, you don't keep up the same regiment. A lot of guys having heart problems. Obviously the brain stuff that he was like, man, you got to take care of yourself. So now he's like a father figure to me. Hate his guts for being, now I hate him for liking him and loving him so much. Nah, but he was instrumental in my career. He was the reason, I give Bill full credit for my ability to play in the league as long as I did, because he helped me understand not only the preparation that it takes to stay around, but the business aspect of it too.
Did you end up watching the two Bills on your network on
ESPN?
Yeah,
I did. I saw it. That was great.
Pretty good stuff.
It was great, man. Yeah. And it's funny how you look at those circles of success, too, because now covering the SEC with Nick Saban and him being a Belichick guy and looking at Parcells and how they all came from the same cloth in Cleveland and all of those guys, you know, the years in which they struggle and then they end up being some of the greatest to ever do it. It's an interesting dynamic. And him and Belichick had beef at one time, too. Right. I think everybody has beef with Parcells, though.
Oh, yeah.
Like, at some point, you don't like him.
He's a confrontational guy.
He's a confrontational guy. The big tuna, man.
Okay. Marcus Spears joining us in studio.
I'll throw him back if I caught him.
Hey, I want to ask you, somebody told me a Parcells story, and I want to see if this resonates with you.
Okay.
And this sounds like him, and see if you got an even better one. I'm sure you got a lot of them.
All right.
But somebody told me one day Parcells had come to Valley Ranch, and somebody bought a ton of McDonald's breakfast sandwiches, and they laid them out on a table. And so he sat there at the table, and he waited to see who was going to come take a sandwich. And if anybody even approached the table, he started criticizing them about their weight and how they shouldn't be eating that. And he just sat there hazing guys over and over and over. And then a little bit later in the day, this player that told me the story went to go meet with him in his office, and there was four sandwich wrappers in the trash can of his office. Does that sound like Bill Parcells?
It's so him. It's so him, man. The mind games that he played. I don't know if you guys have probably heard this. This is one of the famous ones, but after Tony's first game, he put cheese up, hung it on the ceiling. And was like, don't
I've
eat
actually
the-
never heard that.
Yeah, he put cheese up on the ceiling. Like it was tiles, like in this studio. And he hung cheap pieces of cheese in the locker room, around the locker room. And he was like, don't eat the cheese. Don't believe the hype. You're not the greatest thing that ever happened to the Cowboys.
Okay, so I've heard that before, but I didn't know it was related to Tony.
It was related to Tony.
Wow,
like a lot of people say it was the success of the team, but we really didn't start having success until Tony started.
Right. Yeah. As a guy that's now, we're talking, if you don't recognize the voice, that's Marcus Spears joining us in studio here on the Ben and Skin Show. As a guy that's, you know, working in front of the camera now, what'd you think of Tony's first year?
I thought he did great. Obviously, at times as a player, man, I think that's the thing that people have to understand is that you have to train the eye differently to look at games differently, right? I didn't follow the ball when I watched football when I was playing.
You looked at the line.
I looked at the line of scrimmage. Right. So I was oblivious to deep passes until I heard people scream or when the film finally showed the score in the end zone or whatever, because you're so locked in on trying to figure out what you can do to beat this guy. So that translated when I started in television, watching film. And people think it's so natural for us to just look at a film and be able to break down the game. When you play, it's broken down. Quarterbacks, I think, have an advantage because they have to know defense as well as their own job. So by default, they have to know both sides of the ball. Mm-hmm. As a defensive end, like you need to know what the offense is doing and what your guy is doing most of the time. And you figure out how you want to work a game plan around that. So I thought at times he just went into quarterback mode and saying stuff that people really didn't understand, because that's how you talk to Garrett when you were in the locker room, or that's how you would talk to the guys within that realm of quarterbackism, where you use the kind of speech and talk that you have. And then I thought he did great, man. I thought he settled in. I thought he had great rapport. You could see at times, because I think fans appreciate the knowledge, right? That's why you see athletes get hired to be analysts, because fans appreciate the knowledge. They just don't want you to shove it down their throat. They don't want to feel like, I know way more than you, so just shut up and listen. And I think the thing that I discovered, because a lot of people around me are great at their job, But even when I went into television, I wanted fans to be involved in the conversation, right? Because it's a lot of people, out there, especially in the Southeastern Conference, it's a lot of people that digest a lot of football and know a lot of things about the game. That, and they never played. Mm-hmm. But it's just because so much information is relevant and they just know now. They know what to look for. They know what to see. So I have dudes do literally call me and do breakdowns on players. Like on Twitter, I get a message about this is not going to be a good game for Deron Payne at Alabama because this offense is side to side, east and west, and he's more of a north-south guy. He dominates the line of scrimmage within a box. He doesn't really play the whole field. And I'm like, this dude really been watching a lot of football. Mm-hmm. Like he's broken film down. And maybe not right totally because Deron Payne can play east and west. But with that being said, you see the effort that fans are making. And you guys know, too, in radio, you just can't throw stuff out there no more, man. Like, this used to be the end-all, be-all to information.
Right.
Like, we got to wait for the radio show to come on in the morning. Or we got to wait for the news show to come on. Like, people know now.
They already know.
Now they check in for your opinion on the story.
Right.
They don't come to you for the story.
Right. They don't need the score. They got that. Absolutely. They had it about 12 hours ago. All right. He's the great Marcus Spears. He's in studio with us. This is going to be awesome. You're going to hang out for a couple more seconds?
Yeah, man. I'm here with you.
Oh, this is going to be fantastic. We might even play a game show. But you down for a game show?
Okay.
That's coming up a little bit later. Marcus Spears in studio with us. Give your Twitter handle.
My Twitter handle is mspears96, and that's on Twitter, and then my Instagram is mspear96 on Instagram.
Holler at Marcus. Let him know you're liking hearing him on 105.3 The Fan. We appreciate it. Coming up next, we'll get into some other things. We'll maybe talk a little college football. And that's all coming up next. In studio, Marcus Spears, right here on 105.3 The Fan.
We got Marcus Spears hanging out with us in studio here on 105.3 The Fan. So the other day, Barry Church was talking about things that he looks for, okay? Mm-hmm. And I had never even considered this, but he started talking about the leverage that an offensive lineman, the amount of force he's putting his hand into the ground to determine if the guy's going to run block or pass block. Yeah. And so I was fascinated by all that. So my first thought was, well, then if the offensive lineman knows that the guy's looking at that, why doesn't he trick that? Is there times where an offensive lineman, you're going up against him and he's tricking the amount of leverage he puts into the ground? Is that something you can't do it?
Can't do it because if you're coming off the ball and you're sitting light, you're like trying to disguise something, you're going to get blown up. There are telltale signs on every plate. All right,
You look for? What were some of the things you were looking for?
I wasn't a knuckle guy. I was a foot guy. I looked at the feet, right? Some guys will have a bigger flexion of their ankle up. I mean, their heel would be further up sometimes on pass sets. And then they'll be a little lower because they want to get leverage quick. They want to get their foot to the ground quicker to create power. I remember John Runyon, bro. John Runyon was the hardest to decide because he was so tall that he had to overcompensate by being low. So even on pass, he would look low before he could get into his pass set unless he was in a two-point stand. So it's guys like that, but most of the time there is a giveaway. Like we had one on Roethlisberger. Like D-Ware found this one. So Big Ben would get under center, and he would call out of his disguises or whatever he was going to do. But right before he was going to really snap, he would start inching his heel. His back foot heel would start inching down. And he didn't even notice it. He didn't even know he was doing it. But right before he was about to snap, his foot was just – it would just slowly start dropping. Like real subtle. But D-Ware was like one of the greatest in finding that kind of stuff, man. We had keys on guys, man. We had centers that would they knuckles would change because they would start squeezing the ball right before they was about to snap. We had a bunch of stuff, man. We had running backs who eyes would carry you to where the play was going. They didn't even know they were giving away. So it's funny when you don't spend any time other than playing football and looking at film, the things that you could pick up on, man.
Okay, so we talked a little bit about the defensive tackles.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously, you at the SEC Network.
Yeah.
I mean, Deron Payne, you know all about him.
Yeah.
And then we talked a lot about Vita Vea from Washington here.
Yeah.
Are those types of guys who would work out in this scheme here in the 4-3 that we run in Dallas now?
Yeah, I think Deron would work better. I just don't know how much Vita could give you in the pass rush. And obviously in this league on third down, that's when you – I thought that was Dallas's biggest fault. Yeah. Like, just the rush from the inside, being able to control the pocket. Even if you don't get D tackles there for the sack, you give them an opportunity. You give your ends an opportunity to rush how they want to rush, as opposed to saying, I may be three levels higher than my D tackle. He just slip under the tackle and make a throw. Or he slips under the tackle, releases, and runs for 10, 15 yards. So you have to have guys like that. The run, to me, is probably the most versatile D tackle coming out. Like, it's some other guys with better skill sets. Like, I think Hurst is a better pass rusher than DeRon, right? If you just wanted a guy on third down that was going to pass rush. But I think if you're looking for a guy from first to third down that can get those snaps and be productive, I think DeRon is probably the guy that you would feel most comfortable with. And then, too, if you're making a change to a 3-4 or a 4-3, I think he's the most versatile because he can play a zero, which is, for everybody out there, a zero technique, and a 3-4 is the guy that's head up over the center. And then in a 4-3, he could play a 3 technique or a 1, depending on what you wanted him to do, strong side or weak. But then in a 3-4-2, he could move out to a 5 technique defensive end because he's physical enough and he has the length to do it. Jay Ratliff was versatile. Like, Jay Ratliff could have played anything. But a lot of that had to do with Jay's mentality, too. You know, Jay wasn't built to be a zero technique in a 3-4. Like, the guy before him was Jason Ferguson, who was 330. Right. Jay was 285, you know?
Yeah.
So you had to change the game. Now, a thing that helped him was when Wade was here, he was able to get on edges and use his quickness to get upfield. So he created a lot of negative plays like that. I think DeRon is the most versatile guy because of the strength, the physicality that he plays with, but also the athleticism that he has to get sideline to sideline.
Marcus Spears joining us in studio on the Ben and Skin Show, 105.3 The Fan. I want to ask you, you brought up Jay Ratliff. I want to ask you how close to death I was one time.
Oh, man.
You tell me. Because maybe you go into the locker room.
You're
as
not
a
the
media,
only guy.
Well, you go into the locker room, you might think you're in a safety bubble.
Yeah.
But you really weren't really necessarily. And so it was after a tough loss. And, you know, it was early in our careers, and I had a program director going, man, you need to be aggressive. You got to ask the edgy questions. And so I'm asked, there's a bunch of reporters around him, and I wasn't really that seasoned in the Cowboys locker room. And it was just after a tough loss. He was devastated. And I said, is this team undercoached or overhyped? And he looked at me and murdered my soul with his eyeballs.
Yeah, he could do that.
Was I in a dangerous situation?
It was a dangerous moment. Dude, that was, you tell that program director to walk in the lions den themselves.
Yeah. All the reporters looked at me like, oh my God, this is about to get ugly.
And it actually is a great question, but with that being said, you got to know who you're asking.
Let's know your audience, huh?
Yeah, Jay would get you.
Right.
Jay would get you. Jay is like this, man. One of my good friends. We talked actually last week. Jay he's passionate, but he's not just passionate about football. It's like everything. Like, if you his friend, like, he dying for you. And it's not, you know how people say that, right? Like, people say, B, you my dude. We grew up together. Man, I'd die for you if I had to. But as soon as somebody started getting crazy, they like, B, you better run. You know what I'm saying? Like, but Jay is the guy. He's going to go in the alley with you, and he going to try to figure it out first before you can. That's just his mentality, man. So being around him over time helped me understand that about him, because at first I was like everybody else. Like, this is a loose can. At some point, we are going to have the morgue up here at Valley Ranch. Like, at some point, somebody going to be deceased because Jay got a hold to him. But then when you start to realize his heart and how good of a dude he is for the people that he loves and respects, then you start to figure out why he's like he is.
What's he doing now?
Chilling.
Just hanging?
Yeah, I talked to him a couple weeks ago. He had went to Africa and had vacation with his family.
Cool.
He's just enjoying life, man. He needs it, though. Jay put so much work in and so much time in the NFL. He needed, like, a break. Like, from it all, Chicago ended badly. He just needed to get away from football. That culture sometimes, man, can get the best of you mentally, right? And it's such a hard business to stay in. And for Jay being a 7-round draft pick, working his way up to having success here, man, it takes a toll on you mentally and physically. So I think when he got done with the league, it was time to and for all of us. Like, my wife is up here with me right now. We all kind of, if you don't recalibrate and start realizing, like, these are really the important things. Like, I got a 10, an 8, and a 4-year-old. Like, when I was playing the league, my kids, you know, I come home from work, go in the theater room, and watch more film.
Right.
Right? I brought work home. Like, you got to retool your relationship with your wife. You got to learn her schedule. Like, that was our biggest thing. We was just bumping heads, man, because she had a schedule. And now I'm retired, so I want to do things. Right, you know, I got all these ideas about how the house should be ran. It was just beef. Right? But we had the foundation of love. We had the foundation of really knowing she knew that I needed an adjustment period. And I think Jay, but not just Jay, not just myself, most football players. If you identify that there is a period of time where it's like I have no idea what I'm doing, like in regular normal life, like waking up on a Monday, not having to worry about being in skin, talking about how bad of a game you had. And being able to chill on Saturday and not trick your mind because your body feels terrible to tell yourself, I'm on tomorrow. Like, I'm going beast mode and really not feeling it, but it's your job. That's what you got to do. Man, to like, for all of that to just – and I tell, like, dudes that I talk to now in college, it's funny, man, because they all want to go to the league. And they never think about after the league. Right. So I'm kind of like the reaper. Like I'm like the old mad man that don't play anymore. I'm like, figure out what you're gonna do afterwards, right? My dad gave me one of the best. He told me one of the best things before I got drafted. He said, look, it was 100,000 men play this game before you. It's gonna be 100,000 after you. What make you so important to think that this game gonna stop when you get done? And for me, that perspective from him really like set my career. Like, doing media now is something, you guys know, I was prevalent. Like, I was there to be asked the hard questions, to talk to people. That was a part of it. Like, this was my practice when I was playing and doing stuff in the offseason. Like, it was important for me to figure out what I was going to do. I went and worked at the Dallas Morning News after I left Baltimore for $2.50 an hour. To see if I wanted to be a journalist.
So you're one of the highest paid guys over there.
I was one of the highest paid ever. Shout out to the B-Low.
No doubt.
But sitting at a cubicle in a confined space, I couldn't. Just me, my makeup wouldn't allow me to do that. Right. So television, radio, being able to entertain, laugh, have fun. I'm on this show with Greg McElroy on Monday nights, man, thinking out loud. And it is unlike any other sports show on TV. We are clowns. We know what we're talking about, but we are us,
having
man.
Fun.
And very rarely in television you get to be your true, like, 100% self. Like, and Greg was almost a Rhodes Scholar. So he's the buttoned up. He's a game. He's a commentator on games on Saturday. And I'm like this dude that don't give a damn. Like, I'm from South Baton Rouge. I don't care. Like, I love doing what I'm doing. So
they're a buddy cop movie.
Exactly.
Well, tell people where to find this.
So Thinking Out Loud is on SEC Network. I don't even know the station that it's on the network. But SEC Network, Thinking Out Loud, is Monday nights just during football season. And dude, I'm telling y'all, y'all check us out, bro. It's crazy. We did a skit from HR. It's a classic.
Okay.
Right. Just not a lot of people saw it because they didn't know. But it's a classic, bro. It's crazy.
All right. Well, let's tweet it out. Let's get it out to everybody. Let's get a clip. Okay, I want to ask you about this. Marcus Spears in studio with us on the Ben and Skin Show. We're going to do a game show. But I'm always fascinated by the levels of sports. Like, your best guys at high school go to college, and then only the best at college go to the pros, and then only the best pros have these illustrious Pro Bowl careers or what have you. And so I'm always fascinated when I meet a professional athlete and they tell me about the pro athletes that had them in awe. Yeah. We were talking to Jesse Holly one time, and we love Jesse Holly. You know Jesse, right?
Yep.
And Jesse was talking about a time that DeMarcus Ware was lifting weights and that there was just a crowd of Cowboys around him staring at him going, what is happening? What the hell is he doing? Like, these are professional athletes who have made it to the NFL who are in awe of him as a human.
Yeah.
And so I'd just love to know, was there any moments like that for you where, I mean, obviously you're a first-round pick yourself, but are you looking at, you know, some of your teammates and going, good Lord, this guy is special?
Terrell Owens. Dude, listen. First of all, he beat Orlando Scandrick and Pac-Man in a foot race. He was 10 years older than him.
Wow.
Every time he caught a pass in practice, full speed to the end zone. Didn't matter what it was. Catch it, turn up the field, full speed to the end zone. And he would come, like, the preparation that he would put into taking care of his body, being ready, but just the work ethic, man. Like, these dudes, that's what I tell people. Like, I wasn't the greatest NFL player because I didn't work like them dudes. Like, you think you working hard until you see T.O., right? You think, like I'm in the weight room, and I'm working out, and I'm running the sprints, and I'm doing all of that. But you think you working until you see, like, oh, that's what a Hall of Fame player looks like. Right. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. And then you try to emulate that, and it's not in your makeup. Like, but it's hard for professional athletes to admit that. That wasn't in my makeup to work like T.O., right? I had my workload that I would go to, and it was probably above most average athletes, but it wasn't T.O. It wasn't D-Ware. Yeah. Like, that type of work was different animals. And then you got some dudes that are just freak athletes. Like, you got some dudes like Larry Allen who don't do anything in the offseason and is the best offensive lineman in the NFL. Like,
born that
so,
way.
Yeah, so you got those type of guys too. But when it comes to T.O., man, I just – D-Ware is probably the most freakish athlete from a strength, size, and speed standpoint I've ever been around. T.O. from a – every element, like if you made a player on Madden, right. It would be T.O.
Yeah.
Awesome.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.